All right, patrons, it's time to talk about the crash course and the grading scale. And I think this is a perfect place to
have an excuse to talk about this because we don't. Like, save for maybe a few back and forth messages. Like, I do feel like the crash course sneaks up on us sometimes. And then we're just like, well, we're going to do this. And I'd like to reflect because even just one of your thoughts that you messaged me in Discord, I was like, oh, yeah, we definitely should do that. Like, we spent an hour plus on card grading differences before getting to the top commons and uncommons. And I think that's backwards.
Yeah, well, so it's interesting in that, like, I think your initial instinct was right because we had talked about the structure for the crash course and you were like, well, I want to save the top commons and uncommons for the end because that's the coolest thing. Like, that's what people want. So we should put it at the end to have a big finish at the end.
A big takeaway or whatever.
Right. And I think your instincts are right for that. But in practice, what ends up happening is we argue about cards and then we're like an hour and 45 minutes in and we're like, oh God, we gotta wrap things up. And then we rush through the top commons and the top uncommons, which are arguably the most important cards in the set. And I think we would be better served potentially by like the arguing about card grading is fun, but it's not always particularly fruitful. And I think it is good TV, as you like to say. But I think sometimes the arguments really are a flop. And I think if we were choosier about which arguments to have, like ones that we expect to be good arguments, rather than just all of them where we had grade differences, like be pickier about that, that would leave us more time to spend on the top commons and the uncommons. And then we could dive into why we expect them to be the top commons and the uncommons, because I think that is more fruitful discussion for people heading into the format.
That is the thing that really clicked for me, and as embarrassingly clicked for me 400 plus episodes deep of, like, you know, one of our purpose of the crash course is to, like, just give you as much big picture information as possible. And I think we really want to, and the impetus for the grading scale shift, which we'll get to talking about that, was to weed out, like, we want to stop arguing about D pluses versus C minuses and really focus on the cards that matter. And I feel like what I want to do or what I want to propose to you is starting with those lists of top uncommons and commons and letting the differences in those lists be the springboard for grade disagreement discussions. Like, and the fact that if we get to start with those, one of the reasons we stopped or weren't really interested in ever doing card by card set reviews is, like, a lot of cards are, you know, sure, context matters, but they're variations on themes. Like, do you need to hear us tell you why Doomblade is a good card and how good? Like, no, like, we know how good these kinds of archetypal cards are. This set, I think, was perhaps more tricky than most to evaluate because of the introduction of vehicles and start your engines and exhaust and whatever. But, like, largely, I think we could stand to do a bit more of, like, okay, we think Glory Heath Lynx is the best white uncommon. Both of us do. Let's spend a minute talking about why this card looks so good to us. Rather than, I feel like a lot of times when you and I come to the same conclusion about a card,
we assume that everyone else will also, which is not necessarily true. Yes.
Correct.
Like, and that, I think that has served the show well. Like, our baseline assumption for the show is that, like, we're doing the show for people like us. Like, that has been our target audience from the get-go. And I think that has been great for the success of the show and for us, like, our enjoyment of the show. Because I would enjoy it less if I felt like we were not able to talk on the level of, like, two peers who are into Magic the Gathering.
Right.
But I agree with what you said there. It oftentimes leads us to not talk about cards that we agree on, but that might not be intuitive to everyone else. And even if other people agree, some segment of our listeners could serve to hear why we think it's a good card.
Correct. Yeah. I think just, like, okay, why did you both think that this is the best white uncommon? Or why did you think this? And then letting the, oh, like, that's your number one. That didn't even make my list. Let's talk about that. Let's then talk about what were the other contenders.
Yes.
And I think then that can lead us to, okay, like, so sometimes we'll be like, oh man, I could have picked from, like, any of these seven cards for Black's top uncommons. Cool, let's talk about those. Let's talk about that list then. Versus, or like, oh, so this didn't make your list. Why not? Like, well, I didn't actually think that was good. And then I feel like that will lead us to talking about the cards that piqued our interest rather than I think we get bogged down a little bit in the, we're going to talk about everything we disagreed on.
Yes, I agree completely. And it will feel more like an episode where we come with separate lists. And I think those are some of our best episodes.
Yes.
Because we do come with separate lists. We just, like, we literally are just reading cards for like 10 minutes that are, and going, yep, that made my list, or nope, that didn't make my list. Like, it's like 10 minutes of us reading cards.
Correct.
That are some of the most important cards in the format. And yes. That feels wrong to me that we are not spending the time on those.
So is that where we, like, how much big picture stuff is necessary before getting to that? Is that where we start?
No, I don't think so. Because, like, for example, with this format, we didn't even know what all 10 color pairs were doing the week prior when we did the previews episode. And I think we also need to assume that some amount of our listeners have not listened to the previews episode. And so and are new to the Crash Course and maybe new to the podcast in general. So I think we need to do, like, welcome, here's Ether Drift, here's the color pairs, here's the mechanics. If you want more detail, check out our previous episode. But, like,
yes,
I think there needs to be some amount of that before we just dive into the deep end.
Okay. I like that reframing for future, for the next Crash Course at least, and then we can evaluate how that goes. But I think that will let us focus on the cards that we expect to matter more and will help us, I think, then hone in on the disagreements that are more interesting than not.
Correct. And I think the other, like, you had talked about how much big picture stuff do we need to do. I still am in, you seem less than me into how the removal matches up with the creatures. Like, I'm still very into that segment, like the removal and the creature sizing, etc. But the rest of it, like the fixing or the there's 20 cards with Start Your Engines or the blah, 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 blah. That, like, I think initially was great. Like, I think the idea was good, but I think in practice it has largely gone by for our show because 17 lands and data just does it all so much better as yes. soon as the format starts. And I don't think that stuff really helps form our opinions, but then it could still. So, like, I think we should pepper it in to our card rankings and whatever, because it might inform that, right? Like, let's say you look up how much blah, 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 and that's the reason a card is your top common or in 10 commons that matter, or you expect there to not be much fixing, which is why you put Night Market or whatever it's called in your top commons, that land with cycling. Like, to pepper it in there.
Yes.
Rather than to read a bunch of arbitrary stuff about the format as well.
Well, and I think because I felt like, and we made this shift, I think a while back, or, you know, it wasn't immediate, but the shift of, like, if I can't give you a takeaway from reading a bunch of, like, there's 20 instances of blah, blah, blah. If I don't have a takeaway from that, then, like, there's no point in me saying those numbers because they're just stats for stats sake. And that's sort of how I feel about the creatures versus removal. Like, that's why I'm less interested in doing that. Because if I don't have a takeaway of, like, I think we had some good takeaways this time. Like, we pegged, okay, white doesn't really get good interaction. We expected, like, I expected Flood the Engine to play well because there wasn't a lot of enchantment hate running around. But beyond that, like, what does it do? Like, what are the takeaways from it? Or how can we package that in a way that says, like, and here's what this information means to you.
And maybe it's a quicker hit. Maybe that's what I want, is that, okay, like, we still do the work and then just give a brief summary of, like, we expect Lightning Strike to be great. X3 looks like the magic number.
Like, would have been cool to have the take of Grimbauble looks nuts, but Sorcery Speed is, like, I love that as a future takeaway.
But that's so hard to have that take without playing with that card, because Grimbauble looks nuts.
I know, but now we do have that, and I'm sure we'll see that effect again in the future.
Right, sure. Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, I think it would be great.
I'm into that.
But I'm also in for, yes, peppering, rather than having a stats section. Like, if we want to do that work, and then if it can inform a reason for a card making or not making a list, then great. But otherwise, maybe we don't need to bring it up.
Yeah, because I think there's been, I think that style of the Crash Course has run its course. as it were. Like, we were trying to do something very different from LR initially, and I think we succeeded in that endeavor. And I think we're also better content creators now than we were when we started doing that. And I think I think there's just more room for us to talk about the cards that matter, and that that will be helpful discussion for people.
So I compiled a, like, got a handful of comments that I found fruitful that I just wanted to, like, have at my fingertips for this discussion. And one thing, as we're talking about the lists, one thing that someone, Looser Booster in Discord, brought up was just worrying if our sort of arbitrary numbers for lists was perhaps shortcutting any conversations. And I don't feel that for myself. And I think the bit that we often have of, like, you exceeding lists is mostly a fun bit. And you, I have to imagine, never feel restrained.
I do not feel any restraint. But I do want to have sleeper lists for that reason. Like,
yes,
if we pick a number and I still want to talk about a card, I want a place to talk about it, which is the sleeper list. And so if I've got, whatever, 8 sleeper cards, you're going to sit there and listen to my 8 sleeper cards.
For sure. Right. Which I think is, that's in the spirit of, we want to make sure that we're talking about the things that we expect to matter. And whether that is 10 cards or 18 cards, you're going to get those cards.
Yes. But I also do think 10 is a nice number of, like, that's 2 per color or whatever ish. And on balance, some colors are going to be better than others. And oftentimes when you dip into the third, it's like, well, if you're this archetype, like, to try to pick out, that was the initial mission statement with the 10 commons that matter after we hit the play booster era, was how many commons do we expect to matter? And let's pick the ones that are generically powerful, like that are going to be players in the format without qualifiers needed.
Well, and the thing it lets you do is when there's like we weren't doing this when Murders at Karlov Manor came around, but if we were, where does Dogwalker go? Because it's not a white, like, it's not going to be in your top white or top red commons,
right?
But it is one of the best commons in the set, and so where do you have a space to talk about that? And I think just having a
blanket commons that matter. Yeah.
Yes. Should we talk about grades?
We can talk about grades.
Okay. I have lots of, they're mostly questions. They're not, like, I have no decisions made yet. But I am, and truly, like, I mean, this is only for, you know, a few hundred folks out there. And I feel like probably most people who are listening to this episode are on board with A's and B's and numbers. Definitely get some feedback out in the world that this list, some YouTube comment was like, this grading scale is capital H horrendous.
The YouTube comments were not kind to the numbers and letters grading scale this time around.
But we get feedback from Beers SC on Twitch was like, this is the crash course where the grading scale worked the best for me. I feel like it led to the best conversations between you guys. And so, like, it's not going to hit for everybody, and it's going to miss for some number of people. It's all fine. I'm just trying to figure out what is the best for us. I have questions of, should we just stop trying to, like, toe this line and just go some sort of all numbers list and just make our own scale that makes sense, that doesn't also partially use the LR scale? Do we, what I have wondered is, can we go back to use just letters with, like, having this practice of, like, thinking about cards in this way? And then can we go back and use the letters only system and still have fruitful discussions and still come armed with thinking about cards in this way? Should we, and the big thing that we came to and that I think spawned some conversation in the Discord of, what is the point of a grade? Because we flip-flop on it. Of, is a grade about this, how the card's going to play? Or is the grade about a reflection of where you're going to pick it in the draft?
I was thinking about that one, and I think I have sort of an answer. I think the better a card is, the more I tend to grade it on how good is this card, like a reflection of the card's intrinsic power level. Yes. Uh-huh. And I think the worse a card is, the more I tend to grade it on where will I draft it.
That's bad, right?
That it's not consistent?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. That's less than I do.
I flip-flop too, but I do feel like that's the, like, the grades and tier lists. Tier lists are about pick orders, and that's what grades are. Grades are putting cards, stacking them up against each other about where you would pick them in the draft.
But the number system definitely does not lead to that. The number system tends to lead to how they're going to play.
Right.
like the 1, 2, 3, 4 about which archetypes.
Which is then, it's sort of implied that you're not picking them highly. Like a four, you're never first picking, I guess you're first picking a four sometimes.
Maybe, hopefully not.
Yeah, ideally you're picking B, you're first picking A's and B's.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of implied in the number system that once you get to the numbers, context matters. Like you're never first, you're never slash rarely first picking these. And so.
But I think the biggest thing we run into of, we had this conversation, for example, I think this is where this came up from feedback, is several times in our discussion this time around, I had given something a 2 and you had given it a 0. And I was like, well, I expected to play in these two archetypes. And you were like, well, does it really matter in those two archetypes?
And or are you ever picking it?
No, uncle. Like, I'm never picking it highly. It's a 0. You're right. So I think there's room. But the first broader question that we have to answer is, do we want to stick with a numbers thing? I think it has pros and cons. I do think it has broadly led to better discussions for both of us, which I like. Mm-hmm. But the big knock against it is that it adds a significant barrier to entry for new listeners to our show. Like,
correct.
Because we are now treating it like canon at this point. People are coming in and are like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know? So let me propose this, because I was just thinking about this when you had suggested switching back to the letter scale. What if we, because I think it is helpful for us. It's certainly helpful for me grading the cards that way. I certainly enjoy putting a 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4 on cards more than I enjoy C plus through F or whatever.
Well, I think it just largely lets us, like, this is one of Beers's points, was like, there are just so many cards where we would have given C or C minus and not talked about them.
Right.
Where I do think it's worth talking about them. But then the thing that I'm now thinking of is, like, if we are switching the crash course in this way where we're going to focus on the lists first of the things we think will matter and let the differences of those lists inform the cards we want to discuss, that maybe that doesn't matter.
Well, but the other thing we could do to add accessibility is, like, whatever, we can talk about 4, 3s, 2s, and 1s if we wanted, or people know that now so they can use it for themselves if they find it a helpful tool. But we could still grade them 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 ourselves, and then when we peg the ones that we want to talk about, we can give it a letter grade and say, we're talking about this, here's the grade I gave it, you thought it belongs in two archetypes, I thought it belonged in 0. Like, that way we can announce a letter grade. Yeah. To the general listening audience. Because that's more grokkable, accessible, and we don't have to go into the weird 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 thing. But then there's still a piece of, what are we going to do when we announce the grading scale before we get into the card differences, you know, like they do on LR.
I think it would be A through F then, in that sense. And the 0 through 4 would largely just be for us, and then could inform discussions. But we, yeah, like, as a stamp, would be like, I think this is a C plus. Well, then I think it's a C minus. And then we could talk about, well, where do you think it's going to play? Or I think every, I mean, because the thing about it is that they're so much closer.
But it, like, whether it's, I just, like, I'm kind of at the point where in my Magic life, I don't give a crap whether something's a C plus or a C minus.
Yeah.
What I care about is what we're discussing, which is, how many archetypes is it going to play in? And does it matter in those archetypes? And how much does it matter in those archetypes? Because, like, technically under LR's grading scale, a card that's a D plus could be outstanding in an archetype, right? Like, you rarely play it, but when you do, like, if it finds the right home, it can matter, like that sort of thing. Getting the right 23rd card in an archetype can matter a ton in Modern Limited.
The thing that the number system, I know it's clunky, but we don't have to say build around or synergy anymore.
Correct.
Which is a real, like, that's such a mouthful and a headache. And then it's also really hard to know, like, you gave this a C plus and I gave this a synergy B. Do we agree? Like, I think we would largely be like, yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. It's like, well, but we're not.
But couldn't we also just get away from the grading system altogether? Like, we grade the cards. Like, we grade the cards. We see where we're different. And, like, we just pick cards to talk about that we've got different opinions on. And don't even have to, like...
No, but we have to have a bait. We have to have something that anchors the discussion, because then you get into the adjective territory of, like, where I'm like, great, it's fine. Good. And you're like, this is great. Like, you, because well, you're like, if you're excited, I'm like, this is terrible. And then we both think it's a C.
Okay. So then I think that should probably be a letter grade, ultimately, if we're trying to make the show as accessible as possible.
I just think, like, well, I don't know if that's how I don't know if accessibility is my clarity is my
goal.
My goal. And I'm less, If I was convinced that the number, if the, what we have is the best way to talk about cards, then, and all the people complaining about it, I'd be like, you just hate change and you're not on board and whatever. I don't care. I'm not convinced that this, the thing we've used for the past few crash courses is the best thing. And that's why I think it's worth examining. And so like, just because it's new, I don't think it's bad. Just because people are complaining about it, I don't think it's bad. But I am not sure that it's the best it could be.
And what are your suggested improvements then, sir?
I don't know. I think one thing that might, I don't have the answer for it now, but I do think, you know, we basically just brush off every time we get to, we're like, well, it falls apart when you get to artifacts or lands. Which it does. And I think if we could solve that in some way, that might illuminate the rest of the scale. Here's something I want to float to you. This is something that Semulin did, like when back, like before he basically, you know, became a dad and stopped streaming. But when he did set reviews, they basically just graded cards like with the number based on when you would expect to pick it, like a 1, 2, or 3, and then like 4 through 6, and then
Ooh. Wheel.
It certainly solves the problem of, are we grading cards based on where, like, what are we grading them on? It's very clear. We're grading them on when we think we're picking them in the pack.
That's so messy, though.
Like, why? Why is that messy?
Because a grade, I think this is why we both flip-flop, a grade does encompass more than when you expect to pick it. It's also a reflection of a card's individual power level. It's both. And I think more so, it's a reflection of a card's individual power level than it is, like, where you pick it is a function of it being a powerful card. It's like the chicken and the egg. We're getting very philosophical here.
I know. That's why I thought this was going to make good TV. Okay. So your argument against this is that you're leaving information off the table.
I think you're leaving information off the table. Not only that, but I also think a card that is, what's a good example of a card from Aether Drift? A card like Flood the Engines, for example, like solid removal spell, like, that's super hard to know whether you're going to pick it 4th through 6th or 7th through 8th. Like, because 4th through 6th is substantially different than 7th, 8th to me. And then the wheel is another thing altogether. So much is going to fall into that category that needs differentiating between.
Yeah, that's true. Flood the Engine is actually a really good example. Cause like I could say, I mean, I guess it's 4 to 6, but then a lot of like 4 to 6,
but
just
then
basically
4 to 6 is going to encompass everything. It becomes like D+ to C+, or like D to, like, it's such a wide range. Like C- to C+ is 4 through 6. I think it is less granular and less informative than the number system. So I'm rejecting that.
Okay. Rejection heard and sustained. Is there a way for us to contort the letter system?
Contort the letter system.
Like, can we go back to letters and retain what we like about, it's not, you just can't, right? You just can't do it.
But that's where I think if we, I enjoy grading more with the numbers. Do you?
Yes.
Then why don't we just stick with it? Use that to pick out the cards we want to, because if we're targeting a subsection of cards anyway, right? It's not like we're arguing about every card then when we have number differences. And we will, like, we'll let that, because the thing that's interesting about the numbers is that it leads to better discussion, right?
Yes.
So I think we can still personally use the numbers and then just talk about the cards. Talk about numbers of archetypes we expect them to go in, which is a very natural part of that discussion, and then put a letter grade on it. And maybe if you think it's a, maybe we just artificiate the letter grades afterwards. Like if you think it's a 2 and I think it's a 0, I give it a D+ and you give it a C or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're arguing that it's a C because you expect it to be a key player in these couple of archetypes. But that's the thing I hate about letter grades, because when something matters in 2 archetypes, let's say, I almost always want to give that card a C+. Like, well, C plus to me is matters more than average in an archetype.
Then can we figure out a way to drop A's and B's from our current thing? I feel like the thing that we're that trips people up is I feel like we're trying to toe some line, or like we're using part of the letter grade system, and so you can get on board with then this other weird part. Whereas if we were just like, here's our grading scale, here's how we're talking about cards, and we've got this number thing about archetypes, and then we've got like, instead of B and A, it's like A's and S tiers or whatever, like something that does the same thing but divorces it from the LR letter grades scale.
But that's the fundamental issue is that we ran into with the restaurant style 4-star restaurant we had in episode one or whatever, is that like the LR grading scale is the standard. They're not wrong. Like when they say this is the standard for limited Magic the Gathering. Like,
yes.
And people who make tier lists like Deathsea or whatever, let's say, or Lola and those folks, like they use S, A, B, C, D, whatever. Like they do have S tier in addition to their A, B, C, D. Ultimately, that anything that is not A, B, C, D, F is going to be difficult to translate to other content creators. And I think our thing does translate in that anything that's a number is a C or below. And maybe we just need to make that clearer and then there will be less pushback. Like, and I also think
maybe that's part of it.
I also think the way that we present it, or certainly the way that I presented in this episode flippantly, leads to the type of pushback that we got on YouTube. Like rather than like, hey, we do this wacky thing, like come along or get out. Like rather than presenting it that way, if we're a little more thoughtful about like, this is how we do it. And here's why, that I think it would lead to less of the type of pushback we got on YouTube, for example.
I think that's a good point, too. Yeah, I think rather than
like come up with like a 5 or something for cards that are pulls into a color, like A's and B's are pulls into a color. Everybody knows that from LR, which is why we're using that. And for us, 1 through 4s and C's are below. But we think this is a more helpful way to frame C's and below for you, because we think that ultimately that was the whole purpose initially when I was talking about this, right, was picking out the cards that matter. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are some C's that matter, but where and why, and it's very contextual, and certainly how they fit into an archetype is very dependent on whether they're going to matter.
Okay, I am happy with a lot of this. The one thing I am still not, we still haven't solved the, what is the point of a grade? Is it to tell you where to pick it, or is it to tell
it's
you?
Both. It's both.
But that's so hard.
Yes, and if I had to pick one or the other, I would say it is a summation of a card's power level. Like
over where to pick it.
Yes. If I could only choose one, that is what it is. And then the way that we're trying to provide context to C's and D's, which are cards that are not very powerful, is where are their homes? When might you be able to get them? Why is that a good thing? Like that this only goes in one archetype. And therefore, you're going to be able to get it on the wheel and you might not need to spend a pick on it. But I think ultimately, for me, a grade is how good's a card? Like, put it on quadrant theory. Like, grading is a card evaluation tool, not a when do you pick it tool, right?
Okay. I'm convinced. Because it feels like the power of it informs the pick. The pick doesn't necessarily inform the power. Like, if I tell you I'm tell you I'm happy to first pick it, sure, you know it's an A or a B. If I tell you I'm happy to fourth pick it, you're like, okay, how good is that?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Or like, yeah. So I agree that, okay, then that's just a mental shift for me. Because I think I more often default to where am I picking this?
Certainly that's where you default to with whether something's a 0 or not.
Yes.
Like that is a determining factor for that line.
Yes. I think. Because 0 is, I don't need to pick this highly.
Right.
Okay.
0 is it doesn't matter. But I think that's why we had those conversations, because one of us thinks it matters and one of us thinks it doesn't. And then we have that thing. But ultimately wrapped up in that conversation is, well, when are you going to pick it? And that's where people start to get confused.
Yeah.
But I think that's a fine conversation to have. I don't think that's a bad conversation.
Well, and I think also perhaps reframing of the crash course may lead us to just
less
have
of, less of that type of conversation, for sure. If we're not talking about every single card, like those aren't going to be the interesting ones to talk about.
Right. And they're not. They're just not.
They're not.
Like, it's not that interesting for me to be like, that's not a 0, it's a 2. And you to be like, well, I think it's going to be good in these two decks. Like, okay.
Right. Those aren't going to be the cards we pick out. So I think that's just going to eliminate itself naturally.
Okay. I feel good.
I feel good too.
Well, we haven't had a chance to really like, I don't know, dive into that.
It's good. And those are super fun conversations to have with you. What I think you need to do is, I think you need to cut the loose stuff at the beginning and put it at the end so that if people are listening to Lords Unlimited for the first time, they make it to the good stuff.
Okay.
I do think that needs to happen. No kappa.
Sounds good. Sounds good. But I'm going to leave this.
If you're hearing this episode, if you're hearing this, know that whatever you're hearing after this was initially the start of the episode originally.
12 minutes of basketball nonsense for you coming up, folks. I think that's good. I'm excited to see what the next iteration. I think those are some good notes for us in terms of how we present the grading scale, how we're going to frame the crash course, I think is huge, and how we're thinking about what the purpose of a grade is.
Yeah, I like it. I think this could have been an entire episode for everybody. This is just good magic philosophy here.
Well, maybe we'll drop it on the main feed. Give people, we said we can tease some of these out. You know?
I love that. Let's
maybe
do
we'll
it.
Just drop this. Sans basketball. We'll drop this.
No, the Luke stuff
the basketball
gotta be in there.
Stays? Okay.
The basketball's great. The basketball's okay. Premium. For anybody who, well, it appeals to a very niche audience, but that people, if it's at the end, people can be like, whatever, I'm done with this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the people who appreciate it will be like, oh, that Ben guy, he knows what's up with the NBA and Magic.
I like it. All right, folks, thank you so much. It is unlimited, but we'll put a limit to it now, and we'll catch you next week.
Except we won't, because there's 12 more minutes of basketball talk.
Gotcha.
Got him. See you, everybody.
All right, patrons, we had a special request for I now even forget what it was. What's the request?
they want to know the Luka Doncic trade in terms of a Magic the Gathering card set in Magic the Gathering, right?
Or just like, or a situation. Yeah, whatever, however you want to take this.
I thought about this, and I think the easiest way to frame this, rather than like dollar amounts, because that's kind of like abstract. So do you know who Luka Doncic is? Let's start there.
I know nothing about any of this.
Okay, well, let's play a fun game first. You've got some game shows for me. I'm going to name an NBA player, and you try to tell me what team you think they play on. Try to tell me what team I think they play on. So we'll start with number one. We'll start with LeBron James.
He's in Cleveland now?
Not Cleveland. No. That was several years ago. He was Cleveland, then Miami, then back to Cleveland, and now he is with the Los Angeles Lakers, which is where our dear friend Luka Doncic now plays.
Okay, great.
All right, Steph Curry.
A team of the Westerly variety.
It is a team of the Westerly variety. That is correct.
I couldn't tell you. This is mostly that I don't know basketball teams.
Don't know the basketball team names.
Yeah.
Do you want me to give you a team name and you could try to give me a famous player that plays for that team? We could do it the other way.
That's not going to happen. I'll give you time zones that exists.
Western is the correct time zone.
Okay, he's West Coast.
Plays for the Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
No, that's a made up.
That's not a made up name.
You just made that up.
NBA champion a couple years ago. East Coast. Plays for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Great. Milwaukee is East Coast. That's got to be at least Central, right?
Eastern Conference, I guess. Oh, okay. That's what I'm thinking. There's two conferences. Eastern two Conference, Western Conference.
I was giving myself one of four. You're making
zones.
It even easier,
I'm giving you one of two. All right. Okay. We'll get to the Luka Doncic trade.
Yeah.
So Luka Doncic was traded to the Lakers from the Dallas Mavericks
for
Anthony Davis, who plays on the Lakers. And Anthony Davis is very good, a little older. He's like 33 years old, probably somewhere in that range. Super tall, like 7-footer center, but very lanky, versatile, very good on defense, but also good offensively too. Like has some games where he can put up 30 pretty easily or whatever. Perennial all-star. Luka Doncic is 25 years old, very young, one of the best offensive players the NBA has ever seen, but also like a truly atrocious at defense, like just refuses to try on the defensive end of the court. So here are my Magic card comps for this Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis trade.
Why was this trade like newsworthy?
It was two stars, first of all, but also like it was very unexpected. Like trades like this usually are rumored and they're percolations and like people have an idea that trades are going to happen because players have been shopped around or like teams try to get the best deal. And this trade just happened. It felt like in the middle of the night with no one knowing, which is very hard to do in the modern like Twitter information age, that sort of thing. So it was very unexpected that way. And also like just felt like gross. You'll understand when I put it in terms of Magic cards.
Okay.
Also felt like gross negligence on the part of the Mavericks because the Anthony Davis is not nearly as good as Luka Doncic. So like there's an age gap, first of all, like he's 33 versus 25. And there are more details to the trade, I'm sure, that I don't know. But the headliner is Doncic for Davis and mm-hmm. not that many picks. So you can also trade draft picks like for future years. So every year there's a draft where you get a pick the best college players.
You can trade in futures?
Yeah, you can trade in futures.
I love that. That's very cool.
So draft picks, like the college players can register for the NBA at the end of the college season. And then depending on how good your record was, you'll get a draft pick from the college players. So if your team is bad, then you enter a lottery to have the best chance to get the first overall pick to try to draft a good college player to make your team better. Like to try to make it more competitive. This is great. You need to start watching sports. I think you would like it.
I do. The problem is I live in the worst city where like we have every sport represented except basketball. Basketball is the one sport that I would like. I got into it. I moved to Chicago the year of the year Derrick Rose got hurt. Bulls.
Okay. Like that he was MVP nonsense, like super fast.
I my roommate when I lived in Chicago, like got me into it. And I finally like there was a thing because I remember I didn't know how to like watch it because like the depth of vision for watching basketball is kind of weird and it's hard to know like what is a good shot? Where is the ball? What's happening? And I remember just like one moment it just clicked. I was like, oh, I know how to watch this now and like enjoy it. And I really loved that year watching like Dirk. You mentioned the Dallas Mavericks, Dirk Nowitzki. That was like his MVP.
Look at you. Okay. So we just needed to go like 2010s basketball players.
But like, so I just need Pittsburgh to have a basketball team, but they don't. And like, so they care about all these, like, I don't care. I'm never going to get into hockey or football.
Listen,
but basketball, I do like.
I live in Jasper, Indiana. You got to start watching sports. Jasper is never going to have any kind of a team. The Pacers are like 2.5 hours away from me. You just got to pick a team. Where were we going with this? Oh, I was explaining how grossly mishandled the trade seemed to be on the outside. So Luka Doncic, to put it in perspective, is one of the best prospects, like truly like, and basketball being great matters so much. Like it's like Cube, right? Like a Black Lotus is so much better than a random card. Like, I don't know, Shieldred or something. Like Shieldred's also a great card, but Black Lotus is way better, right? So like Luka Doncic is in like not a power nine tier, but like very close to power nine, like clear pack one, pick one most of the time.
A Minsk and Boo, perhaps.
Yes, that's where we're going. That's where we're going with this.
Okay.
Analogy, you pegged it. So they shopped him for a card that is not nearly as good. So imagine if you were cubing and you could always start your deck with a Minsk and Boo, which I think is a very good representative for Luka Doncic. Newer card, younger, like going to retain its power level because it's a fresher card. Very good at offense. Not great at defense because it's a planeswalker, doesn't protect itself very well. That sort of thing. So Minsk and Boo is literally the card that I had in mind for Luka Doncic versus Anthony Davis, who's a very good card, but a little older, like something like Thoughtseize, I think, is a good comp for Anthony Davis. Like great on defense, can totally disrupt your opponent's life. Every once in a while can completely carry a game because you cast Thoughtseize. Like if you could choose to always start your vintage cube draft with Minsk and Boo versus Thoughtseize, you would do that, right?
Yes.
Like Minsk and Boo is a significant, and Thoughtseize is close because I think Thoughtseize is very good in vintage cube. Maybe it's something like Anthony Davis is closer to Counterspell or something like that versus Minsk and Boo. Like it's a very significant power level gap, but the thing is like the age, like 8 years younger in the NBA, Luka Doncic is going to carry a franchise for the next 10 years from 25 to 35. And Anthony Davis is 33. Like he's nearing the end of that window. And for the trade to have happened with nobody knowing about it, like it just felt like the Mavs didn't come close to, like they could have traded Minsk and Boo for like Counterspell, Remand, and Thoughtseize. Like, and instead they just got a Thoughtseize or something. Like it was very weird. Like the not knowing of it and the feeling like the Lakers management, or not the Lakers management, the Dallas Mavericks management didn't try to get the best deal. Like it felt like they could have gotten more and more future picks. Like even from the Lakers. Let's say they didn't want to try to reach out to other teams. Like they could have, like what would happen is the Mavericks call the Lakers and they're like, hey, we want to trade for Anthony Davis. And the Lakers are like, Anthony Davis isn't available because you don't trade franchise players. And then the Mavericks are like, we'll give you Luka Doncic. And the Lakers are like, all right, great. Anthony Davis will be on the bus there immediately.
Yeah.
Like it was just so, so strange. It was very weird.
Interesting. Well, I tracked that perfectly. Well done. Thank you so much. I thought you were going to hit me with the hard-hitting question of who is playing in the Super Bowl tonight.
Oh, that was coming. I forgot to do that in the main episode. Do you know who's playing in the Super Bowl?
I know it's the Chiefs. I don't know who the other guys are.
Philadelphia Eagles, baby. It's in your state.
It's in my state. I don't care. I truly don't care at all.
You're not going to watch the Super Bowl today? You're going to watch the Super Bowl.
I will. It will be. We'll probably watch the halftime show.
Right?
What do you mean I'll have an event?
You're not going to host an event?
I feel like you're a hoster. I tried to put out the bat signal, got crickets from my text thread with my friends.
Wow.
Like our one friend is a nurse and she's like working 7 to 7 today. And she's like, I work till 7. They could come after. No one else responded. I was like, cool. You're all dead to me. I don't want to see any of you anyway. Fine. But I am going to make some wings. That's as far as I got.
I'll make some wings tonight. Love it.
Who do you like? Who's winning?
It's rigged for the Chiefs, right? I mean, I
because of Travis and Taylor.
Taylor, yeah. I'm sure he's going to propose after the game, or I don't know. I will be rooting against the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not really rooting for Philadelphia. I was really rooting for the Lions when the playoffs started, and then when the Lions lost, I wanted the Washington Commanders to do well, and then they lost. So yeah, it's been and I hate the Buffalo Bills because the Dolphins are in there. The Dolphins are my team, and the Dolphins are in the Bills conference. And so I had to root for the Bills against the Chiefs. Like I thought I hated the Bills enough that I was going to be rooting for the Chiefs against the Bills. And then the game started, and I was like, huh, guess I'm rooting for the Bills. Like it's very weird, a very weird sensation.
So what all do basketball and football? That's those are the two sports you watch?
NBA and the NFL, yeah. And not even college for those.
Yeah.
Really. NBA and the NFL. And NBA much more so than the NFL.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Magic. Let's shift gears here.